Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the sports betting network. Coming up on the show, the Bear, Chris Velika from Fox Sports will join us. We'll go over college football, his picks for the week, some NFL. We got a good Thursday night game, some baseball here as these pennant races come down the stretch. We don't have a ton of great races, AL East, NL West, AL West, maybe some of these wild cards up for grabs, but we'll talk to the Bear and just kind of hop around and see what's on his mind. And we will start here with the NFL, though, because we do have a good Thursday night game, Commanders and the Packers. And before we get to that, just the last couple of games in the NFL is a perfect example of why it's so popular. My goodness, the Sunday night game with the Ravens and the Bills. And the way we do this podcast, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, usually record the Monday one. During the Sunday night game, as it's about to start, I figure you just, you know, react to all the Sunday games and preview the Monday game. Something crazy happens on Sunday night, you can kind of get to it a couple days later. Usually, you know, you can recap the day without without discussing that game. That game was so crazy. And then it was duplicated, I think, Monday night in a similar circumstance because Bills-Ravens felt over. First of all, it's late. It's a 15-point game. And one team can't stop the other. The team that's down 15 can't get a stop. And how are you going to erase a 15-point deficit when you can't get a stop? And then Monday night, the Minnesota game, Minnesota's down by 11 and they can't score. So how are you going to make up 11 points? I was texting one of the group chats saying this 11-point lead feels like a 50-point lead. It feels like the biggest 11-point lead in NFL history because Minnesota couldn't move the ball. McCarthy looked awful, looked like a deer in the headlights, had 20 yards passing deep into the first half. So you got one situation where it's a two-score lead, team losing can't get a stop. The other one, a two-score lead, the team behind can't score. And you know what? They both win. They both win, and Minnesota actually got up by 10 to threaten the Bears teasers. Incredible. It's why the sport is so popular. The games are always close. You never know what's going to happen. I saw Bills were like 40-1 on the money line in one of the books on Sunday. And then Minnesota, I think 14-15-1. I actually looked at it when it was 13-1. I said, you know what? I should probably pull the trigger. After what we saw last night, I should pull the trigger. Of course, I didn't. And then Minnesota comes back, rallies, wins. Ben Johnson had a terrible game, I thought, as Bears coach. I really thought, first of all, now it was a tricky rule, but the play where Hockenson was down, he had a knee on the ground, and the ball gets punched out. I didn't realize, basically, the ball's an extension of the hand, and the guys in the booth, Buck and Aikman, who are good, did a bad job explaining it. But when you're on the ground with the ball, your knee's on the ground, and the ball gets touched, the ball is basically an extension of your body, so you have that protection as a runner, as a ball carrier that, hey, I'm down. You can't knock it out. Now, if Hockenson had fumbled without being touched, that's different. And he hadn't given himself up, that's different. But the contact there blows the play dead. And Johnson didn't know the rule. And that ended up costing him a timeout. And that gave him no shot at the end, combined with the fact 2:02 left, only one timeout. You got to make sure your kicker can A, kick it through the end zone, which didn't happen. It got returned. Or you just kick it out of bounds. You can't let time run off the player. You basically lost another timeout on the kickoff. So he cost himself two timeouts where Minnesota didn't get a first down. He would have put himself in position where Caleb Williams would have had plenty of time to get in field goal range. They moved the ball pretty effortlessly the drive before. So that was a bad job by Ben Johnson, who looked like early on, Ben Johnson, Caleb Williams, this is going to work for Chicago. The first drive was good. They moved the ball pretty well in the first half. And then in the second half, Flores completely dominated a guy who, and Ben Johnson, that's done a good job against him in his career. Ben Johnson, I think 4-0 against Flores in his career going into the Monday night game. So again, just wild games, absolutely wild games. It's why the league is the best. The reactions, the overreactions, and I'm a big part of it, to McCarthy were funny, where the first half and into the second half, really the first three quarters, McCarthy, he's a bust. What was all the hype about? We talk ourselves into these draft picks. You know, he didn't have to throw the ball at Michigan. We were texting about the game at Penn State when he played at Michigan where they didn't throw a pass in the second half and he was never that good and the team carried him. And then, you know what? And I was not opposed to any of it. Then in the fourth quarter, you know, he actually looks pretty good. He's moving around a little. He showed some poise. And I do think as long as he's competent, I think this has been a prevailing take with McCarthy, as long as he's okay, he can throw the ball okay. He can move a little. He's got so many weapons. And Jefferson actually dropped a couple on him Monday night. He's got so many weapons, especially when Addison comes back, that it's going to be hard for him to be bad. The team around him is just too good. They got a pretty good offensive line. They'll get Darrisaw, who's a premier left tackle back soon. They got good backs. They got a good play caller in O'Connell, who's a good coach. A little bit overrated. I don't think he's a great coach. He's a good coach, though. And the fact that they took the ball out of the end zone when the Bears kicked off with 2:02 left was, you know, shows he gets the game for the most part. I think he's an above average coach. I think he gets a little bit too much credit. You know, he's been in two playoff games. He was not competitive really in either. They lost to the Giants at home to Daniel Jones 3 years ago, and they got absolutely buried by the Rams last year, and they had a chance to win the division. I didn't think he coached a great game against the Lions, but he's a good coach, and they've got a very good roster. Once they get Addison back with Jefferson, you know, Thielen didn't do much on Monday night, but I think he'll be a good kind of safety valve veteran presence. That's a good team. It's a really good team, and he just has to not be awful. As long as he's competent, he's going to have a chance to have some success. So it was funny to just see the overreaction. Oh, my God, this guy's awful, which went through my head, too. Why did we talk ourselves into him? Too much hype. Why did they pick this kid 10th overall? And then, it's, you know what? He's going to be a rookie contract with a solid team around him. Looks like McCarthy's going to be pretty good. Quickly on the Sunday night game, just completely ridiculous by Baltimore not running the clock. That was a bad job by them. And you just think of the plays it took for Baltimore to blow that game. The tipped pass, not downing the punt, missed an extra point, tackling the Bills receiver instead of just letting him score the touchdown when you saw your timeout. So, man, these games are just, boy, it's a crazy, crazy league to bet on. And that really might cost, I know it's only week one, and we all overreact and all that. That really, if you look at Buffalo's schedule, it's not that hard. All of their tough games are at home. And now instead of beating the Bills and being up a game plus the tiebreaker, so you're up a game and a half, now you're down a game and a half. That's a three-game swing. That might be the difference between hosting Buffalo in January and visiting Buffalo in January and getting the bye. Again, we're 1 week in. A lot of football to be played, but that's a big game. That's a three-game swing for a Buffalo team that does not have that many tough games on the schedule, and the tough games they do have are all at home, so that could be a big one down the stretch, and that's just an impossible game to lose if you're Baltimore. But enough looking back, let's look ahead here. Thursday night game, Commanders-Packers. I will go, recording this Tuesday night as the baseball game's about to start here, I'll go under 48.5. I just think that's a lot of points for a Thursday night game, which tend to be choppy, low scoring. I think Washington actually played pretty good defensively on Sunday against the Giants. Granted, it's the Giants. Granted, it's Russell Wilson. But Green Bay looked much better defensively. Parsons here, we'll give them a lift. I thought they played really well against Detroit, held them to under 4 yards per play really until garbage time. So getting a 50, getting a 49 plus, you can get to 49. 49 is a key number. But getting to 49 plus, getting seven touchdowns on a Thursday night game without a lot of prep time where, again, the games are usually just choppier. And you got two defenses that are maybe pretty good, maybe improved here, that are known for offense. I would look to go under. Starting to see the threes. Well, there's some threes. There's some 3.5s. There's some three, like, minus 125. So it's three shaded towards 3.5. I'm starting to be concerned they're maybe pricing in properly Green Bay to get the ball first, because Green Bay is minus 192 for the first quarter. That's a little expensive. I wouldn't lay a point and a half for the first quarter, even though I do think they're starting with the ball. Green Bay to score first, minus 150. That's not bad, because, again, I do think they'll start with the ball. I think they'll choose to take the ball if they win the toss, and these other teams usually choose to defer. So that would still be the way I would go, Green Bay to score first. But I am concerned here. Green Bay minus 139 to get the first down is not bad. That would be a best bet. Green Bay minus 139 to get the first down for a team that's probably going to start with the ball. Minus 139 to get the first down, to me, is a very good bet. So mark that as the best bet. And I do like the under more than I like the side or the total. I think Green Bay would win the game, would probably lean towards laying the three, even if I had to lay the 125. That hook obviously always scares you. If you're up 10 late, the back door is open. We saw that last night, even though it was crazy to get in the backdoor situation in the Monday night game where the Minnesota's up 10, they give the touchdown and they lose by three. I could see a scenario like that where Green Bay's up 10 late and Daniels gets him in the backdoor and it lands on three. So I prefer the Green Bay side. I like the underside. And I think Green Bay, out of all of these bets, Green Bay minus 139 to get the first down is the best bet. Quickly here before we get to the Bear, Jackson Dart, 22-1 rookie of the year, is a bet I like. I just think he's going to play soon. And I think as soon as he gets announced as the starter, let's just say, Wilson stinks against Dallas. They're 0-2. And saying, enough of this. We play Dart. That number is going to go from 22-1 to, like, I don't know, 8-1, 10-1, 6-1. It's probably not 6-1, but I don't know, 8-1, something like that. Just because he's a starting quarterback. He's in a New York market, so he's not going to get overlooked. He's got neighbors there. They got a couple running backs. that would be, I think, in these awards, voters tend to skew towards New York because it's a big market. These guys get a lot of attention. Remember, it was a close vote three years ago now with Dable, with Coach of the Year. He won it. Same thing in basketball. Thibodeau won it in a close fight. There is a little bit of a New York. It helps to be in New York with these markets. And you got a starting quarterback. I think it's a little bit of just getting ahead of the number here in terms of betting the 22-1. So Dart, you can bet that at DraftKings, 22-1. To win Offensive Rookie of the Year, just because I think he's going to be the starter sooner than later. And once he's announced the starter, that number is going to get slashed. Genty, you know, rightful favorite, but didn't do much in his opener. Doesn't have a great offensive line. He got a lot of carries, but only 30-something yards. Ibuka, the Tampa receiver, looks pretty good. You know, he's viable. Ward didn't look great. So maybe it's a year where it's a little more wide open here without the great quarterbacks. And Dart, that's the other thing, too. Not only the big market, but the fact that he plays quarterback, I think, does help here. So Dart, 22-1, Rookie of the Year. And best bet, I'll call it a best bet. I like the under. We'll give out the under 48.5, and we'll go Packers minus 139 to get the first down is one I really, really like. I think that is a strong bet based on them getting the ball first. But coming up next, the Bear, Chris Felique, will talk some college. We'll talk some NFL. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him. Fox Sports, Big Noon, Kickoff, the Bear Bets podcast. It is the great Chris Felique. Bear, what's going on, man? Thanks for coming on.
Not a heck of a lot. Just recovering from a week into planes, trains, and automobiles, and looking forward to doing it all over again this week.
We will get to that. We'll get to that later. I have some travel questions, but we got a lot to do. Football, baseball. We'll start with college. We got, I think, three games here between ranked teams. Georgia-Tennessee, I believe, is a game you have some interest in. You have a play. I think Georgia's looked pretty good. I know it's been a couple cupcakes, but are you looking to lay it here with the Bulldogs?
Oh, yeah. I laid it. Once it hit 3.5, I bet it, thinking it was going to come back up. I think there were a couple of groups that played Tennessee, plus the points, but I'd be careful here. If you look at the Josh Heupel, Kirby Smart matchups, the four games, none of them have been close. They've been decided by an average of 20 points a game. Tennessee hasn't thrown a touchdown pass the last 3 years, only had six drives, even reached the end zone. And I think people they're justified in their concerns over Georgia just because of their inability to have a great running game the last couple of weeks and throw the ball. But keep in mind that they're going to get their two best offensive linemen back this week. And that's going to be massive going on the road to Neyland Stadium. And I have, like, people have their doubts about Georgia. I have my doubts about Tennessee. They beat Syracuse in the opener, and Syracuse winds up being not a very good team. Syracuse scored a bunch of points on Tennessee. And then you beat up on East Tennessee State last week. So that doesn't prove anything. I think you just have to trust Kirby Smart. You trust his defense, and you trust once that offensive line gets healthy. This is the kind of game I think that they have circled, and kind of no one believes, everyone thinks we're going to lose kind of deal. He plays that angle up really, really good and gets his team to buy it. He did it last year with Texas in both the SEC championship game and during the regular season. So I think you're going to see Georgia's best game of the year. So I laid the 3.5 with Georgia.
How about the other two? The fifth-ranked Hurricanes. How does that sound? The fifth-ranked Hurricanes against 18 USF and Notre Dame laying a touchdown to A&M. That was an ugly, low-scoring game Labor Day weekend last year. What's just you have a thought or two on either game?
I think this is a terrible spot for South Florida. I say terrible spot. You beat Florida on the road in Gainesville. That is an awesome win, and that is going to get Alex Golish a Power 5 job next year, and it's a great win for them to help them maybe get into the college football playoff later in the year. But as it pertains to this week, there's nothing that Mario Cristobal and the Miami Hurricanes would have rather have seen than that. Now they have USF's full attention. They will be ready, dialed in, locked in. They took care of business last week against a completely overmatched opponent coming off of the big upset. Small upset win over Notre Dame. I think Miami rolls this week at 5. I think they even might still be at this point in the year, maybe a little underranked. Wow. I think there's a if we're basing rankings on results of and quality wins of what we've seen, the only teams you could probably put ahead of them right now would be LSU and Ohio State. If you're ranking Penn State or Georgia or whomever ahead of them right now, you're just basically doing it banked on like your priors and your opinion on who you thought would be better before the year. I was seeing some odds before on Miami to win the national title. Clemson has shorter odds to win the national title than Miami. Alabama has shorter odds to win the title than Miami. It's the market is slow to adjust. And I think this is one of the things in college football now where it's kind of a year to year turnover with rosters and programs and teams. And maybe these markets are a little slow to adjust on realizing how good or how bad a certain team might be. So I think there's still some long-term futures on Miami that are worth playable. The A&M Notre Dame game, I don't have a great feel on that one. My instinct is if UTSA was able, ironically, I'm wearing a UTSA shirt today. If UTSA was able to run the ball on A&M and Kyle Field, I would think that Notre Dame would be able to run the ball on A&M in South Bend, having a week off after the Miami game. Don't know if I want to lay that point. Could be an under type of game. What do we got for the total in that one right now?
48-49, I saw.
49 seems – that feels like an under tie. I could see this along the 27-20, 24-21 type range as well. So those are if I had to make a bet in that game, I would go under.
You and I have a hard time being in Connecticut getting college football futures odds to make the playoffs, win it all. I am checking we'll call it a faraway place. 22-1 for Miami to win it all, playable?
Yeah. That's a ridiculous price.
First number I checked.
They're going to be in the playoff.
Do you have that bet?
Yes, I have. I got 25-1 before the year.
There you go. Wow, so it's only moved to 22-1 after.
Yeah, from when I bet it to now, it's 25. Do I have a better number than that from even longer ago than that? Let me.
And I'm seeing plus 250 ACC.
Yeah, 25. 25 is what I got from. I made that back in February. So
what books do you have books that update playoff odds throughout the year? Or that's one that's hard to find for you?
Yeah, FanDuel does. I know FanDuel does. I think DraftKings does as well. I mean, being in Iowa and spending time in Michigan and New Jersey and New York this past week in my my travels, I was able to get down a lot of stuff in terms of make miss.
But just not Connecticut, right? We can't do that here.
Connecticut, if you check out FanDuel, they do have college football playoff odds up in the state of Connecticut. So, and there are a few. I don't know if you can parlay them, but I know they were up.
I feel like I know I've seen them up because I remember, and you and I both bet it the year Florida State, Bama, and Florida State was undefeated and Bama got in. So it was, you can definitely bet them sometimes, and I feel like sometimes they take them down. I get confused with
it. It's weird.
It seems like there's no rhyme or reason.
It really is, because they say you can't bet on these college title things, but you can bet conferences and you can bet make miss playoff. And I don't think we have awards here. That's another thing that I was looking at this past week too. I think the Heisman market obviously is still wide open. Obviously Mateer went to favoritism, I think, this past weekend, but I worry about him long-term and his ability to stay healthy and take a hit the way he's been just carrying the Oklahoma offense. Once he gets into the heart of the SEC schedule, they're probably going to pick up a few more losses. They really need one of those running backs to improve. But I have a lot of Carson Beck right now to win the Heisman. I bet a Jeremiah Love before the year to win the Heisman. That's obviously dead. The one bet I did add this past weekend was Dante Moore to win the Heisman. I think Oregon is really good, and I could have obviously gotten a better number prior to Saturday's annihilation of Oklahoma State. But we talked about this before the year started. It's not a foregone conclusion that they were going to go to Penn State and lose. If they go to Penn State and win, the prospects of Oregon going 12-0 shoots through the roof, and his Heisman price is going to go slashed in probably half. So, if you want to bet Dante Moore, I think you got to do it within the next couple of weeks before they go to Penn State. And if they win, at the very least, you're going to have a great number.
Have you thought about an Oregon-Miami national title game, you versus Jeff? That'd be great for the podcast. I mean, how much fun would that be?
It would be great. It should that's what should have been the national championship game in 2001. Remember, Oregon had that great year in the Pac-12, but the BCS math computers kept them out, even though Nebraska had gotten annihilated by Colorado in the Big 12. Late in the regular season there. So, yeah, we should have had that game in 2001 instead of Miami, Nebraska. But, you know, that would be a great title game. The Mario Cristobal ties, he kind of built Oregon into what Dan Lanning took over and is continued and carried on there. I would love that. That would be great.
And the reason I brought up the playoffs, and I do see him at FanDuel, I don't see – the team I'm looking for, and that is South Florida. Is South Florida, in your mind, even if they lose to Miami, they're somewhat competitive, and then they run the table? Are they the front runner for the Group of Five representative?
I would think they'd have to be, right? Because the Mountain West is a bad league. I don't think anything UNLV does can really top South Florida winning the American, going to Florida and win, and then maybe potentially playing Miami close this week. Like, and they would obviously, if they win the American, you're knocking out UTSA, you're knocking out Tulane. UTSA might be out anyway now after the loss to Texas State last week. But I think the winner of the American is absolutely going to be the G5 rep.
Yeah, they don't list that. I mean, they do. I do see them at FanDuel. And again, I'm happy that they're up. They haven't always been up, but it's only, you know, you go, they give you the Big 12 teams, the Big 10 teams, the ACC, the SEC teams. They don't give you the Group of Five options. Anything else before we move on to NFL? Anything else you like this week, college football wise?
I did play under 50.5 in Georgia, Tennessee as well. That was something that I played. I don't know what that number moved to. I'm assuming it has fallen since then. I'm looking at a lot of these like kind of like flat dead spots. Temple. Getting points against Oklahoma. That's the mother of all sandwich games for Oklahoma. The big win over Michigan last week. You got Auburn coming in next week. Now you're going to the Link, where there's probably going to be about 8,000 people. Iowa State, I can tell you that Iowa State is paranoid about this game at Arkansas State this week. A couple years back, they went to Ohio U after the Cy-Hawk game and lost. Arkansas State's not very good, but they're north, 21-22 point dog, Arkansas State in this game is. And Iowa State has that a little bit of an emotional letdown after that game. Illinois, who broke Sammy in my hearts this past week, with Duke kind of turning the ball over a million times.
Oh, me too. Yeah, that's me too.
Yeah, they got Western Michigan this week, 28-point favorite, top 10 ranking now. They go to Indiana next week. So we'll see if Illinois is going to get 4 or 5 turnovers a week every game, then they're going to be hard to beat. But laying 28 against Western Michigan coming off of that game and then looking ahead to Indiana, that's one. And then Michigan as well. I wonder about Michigan, physical, hard-fought loss last week. No Sherrone Moore on the sideline this week. Next week you go to Nebraska in what really is a kind of a must win off of that loss at Oklahoma. So like there are some spots for teams this week that certainly have caught my eye. And last week, just kind of go back and recap some of the games that I wrote up and brought up on Big Noon. What was the LSU game against Louisiana Tech? LSU never even came close to covering. Tennessee did cover against the FCS team. A&M never close to covering the 31-point spread against Utah State. Remember, these are 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. You can only get up so many times in a row emotionally. You can only like you can say we're not reading the schedules, reading the newspaper, reading tweets, looking ahead. But they know what's ahead on the schedule. They know that they can get by some of these games with backups and kind of 75% effort. So these kind of sandwich and look at angles, I think, do have a lot of value.
NFL, anything you feel differently about after seeing a week of games?
I might have underestimated the Raiders a little bit. I think Geno looked really good. Again, defensively, they played a Patriots team that I think we were all kind of questioning as to why they were so like highly thought of coming into the year. I mean, I had some unders on them, and they did nothing in that opener to kind of disprove. I think I might have been a little high on the Lions. That was concerning to me. Like it almost looked like the new offensive coordinator didn't really trust Jared Goff to stretch the ball downfield. And I think in that offense with those weapons that they have, you've got to do that. Maybe a little combination of being a little bit higher on the Lions than I should have been, and maybe not as high on the Packers as I should have been. Maybe I was a little bit higher on the Niners only because of the schedule that they had in week one already. Brock Purdy's hurt.
Oh, Kittle is hurt.
They're wide, like McCaffrey with the calf issue. Like maybe that division isn't great, but can they indeed make it through? Like the one thing I will say is that defense looks really good, and I feel really good about the Mikel Williams and Robert Saleh assistant coach and defensive rookie of the year bets that I made.
Yeah, when McCaffrey is your healthiest skill guy after week one, you're in a little bit of trouble, maybe.
It's funny. I remember I was heading out to pick up dinner on Sunday night, and riding, and I was listening to Matt Brown and Mike Somich, and they're talking about, oh yeah, they're watching the game, and yeah, Christian McCaffrey is now lining up at wide receiver because everybody is hurt. I'm like, maybe that'll be a little wrinkle that they can have now. Maybe out of necessity, they might have stumbled into something. So yeah, I'm curious to see how that goes moving forward for the Niners, who just can't, after a couple of years in a row of them being a picture of health.
Yeah,
the bill may have come due.
Packers Commanders, good Thursday night game. There's some expensive threes. There's some 3.5s, total 48.5. Anything you like here?
Haven't really examined the NFL card fully yet. With full apologies. I think the Commanders might be a little bit better than people would have. It's funny. That's another thing we talked about, how like all of this assumption that Jaden Daniels was going to kind of regress this year, but Bo Nix was going to be fine. Like Bo Nix looked terrible.
Good point.
Against really a bad point, yeah. Tennessee team this week. The Commanders might be a little bit better, but that's a really good game. But that was one game that I did look at and I thought that might be worth a play was the Broncos in Tennessee. That Tennessee offense is not a. I have my games wrong. Tennessee's playing
the Rams.
The Rams this week. The Rams defense is what I was thinking of. Yeah, the Rams going up Tennessee. That defense is going to give Tennessee just as much problems as the Broncos defense did. Ward is going to struggle with that all year long. Doesn't look like Brian Callahan in the offense really wants to fully let him go yet either by some of the play calling in the real run-based offense that they had. So, yeah, I could get behind the Rams this week laying that number in Tennessee. That Rams defense is good.
Yeah, Rams laying 5.5 in Tennessee. Broncos laying 2.5. In Indy. And yeah, it's funny because I agree. Like they didn't seem to trust Ward, except they had the ball right before the half on their own goal line. Denver only had two timeouts. You could basically just sneak it or kneel it three times and go to the half of the lead. And they start throwing the ball and they gave up a touchdown after that. It was really strange. And, you know, you mentioned Nix. It's funny. Somebody had a tweet. They said, give Bo Nix a break. He's only 42 years old, which I thought was funny.
Where are you? Have you looked at anything to do with Survivor this week?
I mean, Arizona's the one that I think a lot of people are going to flock to just because you know, if you didn't use them last week, they're home. I mean, let's just go through some of the bigger ones here. There's not a ton of bigger ones, especially
people will probably Cowboys. You think people – I don't trust Dallas at all. I mean, I know Dable's come out and said that Dangerous is going to be the guy, but, like, I don't know if I can trust Dallas. Like, that's another thing that I think people – the ship might have been wrong on Carolina, like all the expectations.
Oh yeah,
they were going to improve. They looked terrible. I mean, they looked bad. They you could argue they even looked worse than the Saints.
All right, well, let's go through some here. Arizona's at home against the Panthers, 6.5, 7-point spread. The Ravens is the biggest spread. They are 11.5 point favorites against Cleveland. It actually didn't look terrible on Sunday. They definitely should have won the game. Bills, if you want to lay a road team, 7 at the Jets. Cowboys, I don't know. What are you thinking?
I could maybe look at the Lions.
Okay.
Even though I just have my questions about them, and you know, what we saw from the Bears yesterday, I know I'm sure people are probably going to be reading between the lines. And you know, Ben Johnson knows the Lions inside out, and he'll be able to come up with the scheme. But that was kind of alarming last night. I mean, look, I was guilty of it too, like J.J. McCarthy and how poor he looked. But what the Bears did offensively after that first couple of like scripted drives and plays, that was concerning to me. And the Lions defense played pretty well up in Green Bay, I thought. So I think Detroit at home against Chicago would be one. The Steelers at home against Seattle. Yeah, I am not a Seattle guy at all this year. Fortunately, we got the win with the Niners in Seattle, which was fortunate. So I would think either the Lions or the Steelers would be the way that I would go.
Whichever team we choose, it will be a lot of fun. It'll be a lot of fun. Baseball, quickly, before we get out of here, a couple other quick things. Baseball, the 12 teams that are in the playoffs entering play Tuesday, those are the 12 we're going to get. Are we going to have any drama? What kind of races are you?
I don't think we're going to have any. I think there might be a little bit of drama. Like you look and you see all these teams are two and a half games out. The Red Sox without Robin Anthony now, and then now Dustin May's hurt. So maybe you can make Mariners are in free fall, but I think ultimately the 12 teams we have are going to be the 12 teams that we get. And we've talked about this as well. Like once you get in, anything can really happen. Like no one would really surprise you in the playoffs. I mean, push comes to shove. Like, I don't know if the Dodgers are really the best team. I mean, everyone keeps, they get guys back. Are they going to get guys back? Are they going to stay healthy? Is Ohtani going to be able to pitch in the postseason and give them 5 innings or so to get to a crappy bullpen? I don't know. I still have this weird suspicion that the Mets are going to be the NL representative in the World Series. Like,
wow.
I know last night the lineup, they didn't come through in Philly, but the fact that Helsey actually pitched well last night was great. The young kids that they brought up have been well. The bullpen, I think the other guys around them are good. And I know people are still hanging on to the Padres, who you just can't trust. Still got this, the Brewers, I think, are not a built for the postseason type of team. I still, like, if I could make one bet right now, it would probably be the Mets to win the NL would be the bet that I would make.
What, you think they'll go all rookie rotation? They really might with all these kids, McClain and with Tong and Spro. The veterans have been bad with Manaea and Senga. I mean, they're probably going to have to trust the young kids, which would be a very interesting scenario.
Which is good. See, I love that because it's almost like you're too young and too dumb to know or care. It's like just go out there and – In pitch and the way that Mendoza and they've been managing the staff and the rotation anyway, it's been just get 5-6 innings out of your starter and then turn it over to your pen. So it might be a formula that works.
Who's the American League team then? If you think it's the Mets, who are they playing?
I think it'll be Houston.
Astros.
Yeah, I'm thinking Hader will be back at some point. Alvarez now back. I think. With Hunter Brown at the top of that rotation, that's a pretty good way to go. I don't trust the Tigers. I know you've got Skubal, who basically, if you lose a game outside to Skubal, you're probably done. That bullpen, I think, has concerns. Blue Jays have kind of come back down to earth and have a bunch of aging stars in that rotation that I don't know if you can trust. I think the Yankees are probably the worst team in the AL playoffs. The Red Sox, I would have loved the Red Sox, but if Anthony isn't back, that's a massive deal. I think it's going to be the Astros, and people will love Mets Astros. That'll bring them out for the Fall Classic, that's for sure.
It'd be funny after all the crapping on the Yankees we did all year if the Yankees are in the World Series, which would surprise me. It wouldn't shock me, but it would surprise me. But Judge, Stanton, Bellinger, Chisholm, Fried and Rodon at the top. Those bullpen guys, those guys can get hot. They all have talent. I don't trust any of them, but they can all get hot. I mean, I don't see it happening, but it would just be kind of ironic if that were the case.
Yeah. The only thing I'd worry about with the Yankees is dropping a fly ball in center field and just butchering Volpe, just a black hole out in the lineup and making dumb – like that's what you have to worry about with the Yankees. They're the – least fundamentally and defensive sound team of anyone in baseball.
Forgetting how many outs there were, running the bases like a little team, you name it. All right, a couple food travel things before we get you out of here. Yeah. You're going where? You're going to be in Northwestern this week?
Yes.
What's the food situation? Are you going to visit Steve Fezzik's old dorm room?
I need to get the Fezzik dorm room. I need to get that address from him in the group chat. Now, I'm going to miss dinner at Gibson's on Thursday, which is going to stink. Because I don't land until 7:30 or so on Thursday, which kind of is a bummer. I've made a request to get Giordano's for lunch on Friday during our meeting, which I hope that a little deep dish with the cheese and sausage oozing out of it would be a great lunchtime menu. The only positive about missing Gibson's on Thursday is I'm hoping I can convince the driver to swing by Portillo's on the way from O'Hare to the hotel. That way I can grab some Portillo's for dinner and bring it back to the hotel, watch the football, fire in some bets, and be in the room. But I think, so hopefully in an ideal world, it'll be Portillo's for dinner on Thursday, Giordano's for lunch on Friday. And then I know Brady Quinn is working on a dinner spot for Friday, and that I'm sure won't disappoint.
All right, so last one. Of all the college campuses, all the college cities you visit, give me the best food from a city, best food, favorite restaurant, and then a favorite dish. So just take it through all of them.
Favorite restaurant is the Smoking Pig in Pendleton, South Carolina, just outside Clemson. It is – people will talk about Dreamland in Tuscaloosa, or I've even brought up Little Dewey in Starkville, Mississippi, which is good. But the best barbecue is Smoking Pig in Clemson, South Carolina, without a doubt. The best thing that I have had is something that we have gotten off the menu at Hyde Park Steakhouse in Columbus. They bring out like this, like, deep fried kind. It's kind of deep fried, but it's so juicy. Or whatever, it's almost like air fried lobster tail. It's just like chunks of lobster, like in the shell. Oh, it is so good. It is amazing. But if you're looking for like best variety, you can't go wrong in Baton Rouge. I mean, you've got your traditional steak places. You've got your Cajun food. You've got some really good Italian places there as well. Yeah, Baton Rouge is like the one like food go-to spot. If you're looking for a bunch of great choices, Baton Rouge would be one. But one restaurant, take me to the Smoking Pig in Clemson, and I'm good for life.
This is really the only reason I wanted to have it on the podcast was this discussion. I mean, the sports stuff is kind of
– And I'm looking forward to next week when Big Noon goes to Salt Lake City for Utah. The last time I was there with game day, Rick Majerus had sent us to an Italian place called Walter's. Best Italian place we've been to on the road. So I've already made the request for a Friday night dinner reservation at Walter's.
Bear, you're the best, man. Appreciate the time. Where can we find you? Wow. Fox, Big Noon Kickoff, Bear Bets.
Absolutely. You know where to find me. You got them all.
All right, man. Hopefully I'll do this again soon. Appreciate you coming on.
Totally, bud.
All right, that will do it. Rate, review, subscribe, Apple, Spotify, wherever you leave reviews. We appreciate it. Trying to, again, recoup the feed, recoup the reviews, kind of starting from scratch here. So trying to spread the word as much as possible. Retweet the podcast. That helps, but appreciate you guys listening. Appreciate the Bear, Chris Felica. We will be back Friday to preview the weekend in the NFL and college. See you Friday.